Court will proceed to the third case, Heckle versus the Commissioner. Mr. Kelly.
May it please the Court, my name is Dan Kelly. I'm Vice Miller with Bart Springer on the brief. We represent the Heckle. The sole issue in this case is one of statutory interpretation of the gift tax statute. The gift tax statute provides an annual exclusion of $10,000 per donee with but one single exception. And that exception is stated as future interest in property. It is our position that the unambiguous meaning of future interest in property does not encompass outright direct gifts, and by that I mean a gift of property including all rights, interests, and title to the whole property. No piece, no part is left out. No conditions, no nothing in the instrument of transfer.
How does the interest that was passed here differ from the interest that was passed in that Simpson case?
There was no direct, outright gift in Simpson to the donees. There was an indirect gift to the donees who were shareholders. A direct gift, if you will, to the corporation that the regs say is deemed to be a gift to the shareholders. So the shareholders, in claiming an exclusion, were in a very peculiar position. They had directly received nothing. They owned nothing. The property that was gifted was owned by the corporation. So the classic indirect gift situation, very much like the trust situation, none of which involve an outright direct gift to a donee. So that question of an outright gift did not arise in Stinson. It was not before the court in Stinson. And the Stinson court, which is Honor wrote the opinion in all truth, has no applicability to this question. In fact, this question, the question of whether an outright gift can be a future interest, or whether the unambiguous meaning of the terms future interest in property can encompass an outright gift, is a case of first impression before this court, every other circuit, and the United States Supreme Court. If this court, let me back up just a minute. In this case, it is uncontested. There is no dispute but what outright gifts of shares in an LLC were given directly to each of the Heckle's children. No dispute whatsoever. The government doesn't dispute that. The tax court did not dispute that. And each share is a standalone property. Under Indiana law, it is personalty. It is a security interest. And indeed, these shares are publicly traded shares in publicly held companies. So there's no dispute whatsoever that there was an outright gift. Now, to the extent the court agrees that the unambiguous meaning of the term future interest in property cannot possibly encompass the whole property, then no question of policy, no regulation can do it otherwise. And I would also say, in answer to his honest question about Stinson, it's pretty clear to me that the court in Stinson deemed the applicability of the terms future interest in property in that case to be ambiguous, not unambiguous. So, in determining the meaning of the future interest in property, how does the court determine unambiguous meaning? Well, quite frankly, any lawyer that looks at the terms future interest in property is going to walk away with a first blush meaning of interest in property. An interest in property is less than the whole property. A future interest in property means less than the whole property. There's no meaning of which I am aware. No meaning that's ever been put forth in any case. No meaning that's been put forth in anything that I have ever read that would say that the terms future interest in property somehow encompass the whole entire property. Once you get to that point, the next natural question is, where on the face of the statute do the terms present interest in property appear, and what do they mean? Looking at 2503B, the terms present interest appear and are used in a meaning, in a sense, that also connotates less than the whole. A present interest is some interest in a whole property that is less than the whole. And on the face of the statute, it is clear that the terms present interest are used to distinguish another type of interest, which is also less than the whole, that is the future interest. So we have two concepts, present interest in property, future interest in property, that have absolutely nothing to do with an outright, absolute gift of the whole. The terms present interest appear in the second sentence of 2503, and they basically say that a present interest shall not be determined not to be a present interest merely because of a power of appointment that might diminish it. The legislative history shows quite clearly that that sentence added in the 40s had only to do with a case or case law that where a trustee might have the power to transfer the corpus to the income beneficiary. The IRS had taken the position that the value of the present interest was indeterminate and therefore it was not a present interest. That particular sentence added in the 40s was to overrule that case law. It's also interesting to me that at the point that the only point where the term present interest comes in the statute is not in any way to have limited the exception. That is to say, if the government is correct, that somehow present interest and its principles are to be elevated to test whether or not an absolute, outright gift of property was intended to be within, they would have to rewrite that statute. There would have to be some modifying language other than the term future interest. They would have to read something like this, that there would be an annual exclusion for all gifts in property unless they were future interests or unless the property did not present an immediate economic benefit to the beneficiaries. There is nothing that modifies all property gifts the annual exclusion except future interest. Nothing. So again, if you arrive at the point of a future interest in property unambiguously does not mean or encompass the whole entire property, the ballgame is over. No policy, nothing will overcome that. And I think it's not without significance that for 70 years, no court has ever had this case or this question in front of it. And I think the obvious reason is that the answer is so obvious that no one would waste a trial court's time, the tax court's time, or the Seventh Circuit court's time, or the Supreme Court's time, trying to convince a court that the terms future interest in property somehow encompass and mean the whole entire property, not just a limited interest in the property.
Obvious is not a word that ordinarily comes to mind when reading the tax code.
Indeed. The code is complex. The concept of an exception from an exclusion only being a future interest, and that the terms future interests do not encompass the whole entire property. Actually, to my way of thinking, it's a pretty simple concept. And to some extent, the tax court is so used to and so involved with, and tax lawyers are so involved with this idea of a future interest that in trust, annuities, and other things does indeed become very, very complex. And I would agree with Your Honor to the point that what is a future interest? What is the future interest in given situations as to annuities and things like that can be very, very complex. But the question of is a future interest but a part of, a piece of the whole is not at all a complex question. And indeed, while the regs are not necessary to answer this question, and they can't be if it's unambiguous, a reading of the regulations concerning what is a future interest and what is a present interest, there is not a single connotation, anything at all, that could be used to mean that the whole, the entire property, can indeed be a future interest. If there are any other questions, I'll reserve my time.
All right, thank you, Mr. Kelly. Mr. Rosenberg.
May it please the court, I'm Kenneth Rosenberg, appearing before the commissioner. There's a whole line of cases, which I'm sure the court is familiar with, from both the Supreme Court and this court that interpret the term future interest as it's used in this gift tax statute. And those cases, including Stinson's estate from this court from 3 years ago, apply the Treasury regulation and its definition of what a future interest is for this purpose. The statute uses the term future interest, but the cases point out that it's not defined there, and the cases have looked to the Treasury regulation. The Treasury regulation says that a future interest does not depend on whether it's vested or contingent, or whether what name is applied to it, but a future interest is an interest that's limited in its use, possession, or enjoyment to a future time. In other words, whether it's a future interest or not hinges on whether the beneficiary or the donee gets the immediate right to use, possess, and enjoy the property. The taxpayer's whole argument is premised on the idea that you don't need to look at that whole line of case law or that whole analysis about delayed enjoyment or use, which I presume is because it's pretty clear on the facts here that the enjoyment was delayed and there was no present right to enjoy this property.
Well, it could be sold, though, right? Could be transferred.
It could.
I know you lose. You would lose. The donor would lose. The transferee would not receive the ability to.
Yes. If it was the operating agreement forbid the transfer or sale, and it said that if a share of ownership was transferred in violation of that the recipient, the new holder, would not become a member of the organization and would not have any voting rights in the organization. He would have right to receive any distributions that were made.
Yeah, now, how much different is that than owning stock in a corporation? Are you saying there's no present value at all, no current equity to the receipt of one of these shares?
No, there was a value to it, and that was stipulated in the tax court. The value of these interests was stipulated. They had an interest, but the question is whether the use or enjoyment was deferred. And it doesn't have to be deferred by a long period of time, as the Ninth Circuit pointed out in the Hamilton case. It's a question of whether they have an immediate right to the use or enjoyment. And under these circumstances where the taxpayer had the complete managerial control over the organization, and he controlled whether assets were sold or bought and whether distributions were made and so forth, and the members of the organization, the recipients of these interests, could not force a distribution, they could not force assets to be sold, and they could not force the organization to be dissolved except by group action. And this is similar to the fact in the Stinson estate of Stinson case and in several of the other cases that we've cited on our brief, including Hamilton and another one from the Fourth Circuit, Maryland National Bank, which was also quite close on the facts. So the main point that I need to make here is that it's not simply a question of whether it was an outright gift of an entire interest in the property. It's a question of whether the use was deferred or put off. This is a question that they're trying not to reach. You know, they reduce it, as counsel said, to a very simple question, whether this statute is so plain on its face that if it's not a complete, if it is a gift of an entire interest in property without any carved out future interest, then therefore it cannot be a future interest, and that's the end of the inquiry. But all these cases indicate that you have to look to the characteristics. And I want to point specifically to the Supreme Court's decision in Pelzer, because in that case they said explicitly that this does not depend on law, local property law definitions, or on rules of conveyancing. It's not a label of future interest. It depends on the use or enjoyment of the property. And so I think the court does have to reach this question. And the tax court, I thought, pointed out in a very persuasive way why that has to be. It's because if it wasn't looking at the actual enjoyment, then this could very easily be evaded by doing what the taxpayer here did. He formed the organization, he put money in, and the organization then purchased these lands with these immature timber on them, looking towards future growth. And after that was done, then he gave shares of interest to the beneficiaries. That is in the distinction of the facts there with the cases that taxpayers are trying to avoid, is situations where the interests were given to the donees first, such as in a trust situation, and then the donor buys something for the trust or makes a donation to the trust, which then gives an indirect benefit to the beneficiary. If you could change the tax result simply by doing things in a different order that way, it obviously doesn't make sense. It's too easy of a way to avoid what the real substantial reason for the distinction between the definition of what a future interest is. There are no cases that taxpayer has cited that support this idea that if it's a direct gift of an outright gift of a complete interest, that therefore all bets are off and you don't even reach the future interest analysis. And there are several cases which have applied this analysis to outright gifts. One is Skouras, S-K-O-U-R-A-S, which we cited in our brief, which was the tax court case affirmed by the Second Circuit, which involved a gift of interest in a life insurance policy. And the same analysis was applied, and it was held to be a future interest, and the exclusions were denied. And there are a couple of other cases, one from the tax court and one from a district court, that we cited. So it would certainly be a surprising step if this court could see its way clear to look at the whole question in a very simplistic way that the taxpayer is suggesting. The Simpson's estate case, as we said in our brief, is controlling here because it involved a gift to the shareholders of a corporation through forgiveness of debt, and that bestowed a benefit. And in that situation, the shareholders of that corporation could not force a distribution and could not force a dissolution. The same sorts of restrictions existed that exist here. So the
this appears more direct, though, does it not? Maybe the effect is the same.
It is a more direct gift, yes. But that's not the question. The question is whether it's a future interest or not, which turns on whether the use or enjoyment is deferred. Yes, I agree that it's more direct. I want to make one further point. Regarding the marketability, you mentioned that couldn't these owners transfer their interest. We had another case that was very similar to this that we discussed in our brief called Chainin from the Court of Claims, and that involved stock interests that were marketable. They were freely marketable. I don't know if it was publicly traded or not, but the court assumed and accepted that they were marketable, but it was still held to be a future interest. So that point in itself, I do not think is dispositive that it was not a future interest. If there are no further questions.
Could the could they have been sold back to the donor? Is the agreement?
I believe what the operating agreement provided was that they would be sold back to the LLC,
Yeah.
Yes, that was the rule. It said if they wanted to transfer them, the operating agreement said they had to be offered first to be sold back to the LLC, and that the manager at his exclusive discretion could decide whether to buy them back.
But admittedly, the discretion is a big condition. But does that give any sense of currency to the value, the marketability that buyback?
No, it doesn't, because the key to it is if the enjoyment is contingent upon some future event which may or may not happen, as the way the Supreme Court put it in several cases, then it's a future interest. So there's an obvious contingency that the manager of the organization, which was Mr. Hackle, had to make the decision to buy them back at the price that he would state. And the operating agreement was very clear. It even said at his discretion, or words to that effect, so that it was clearly a contingency. It wasn't a right that they had to sell them back. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rosenberg. Mr. Kelly.
The concept is simple. And it's common sense, but it's not simplistic. And the concept, quite simply, again, is a future interest in property, by any stretch of the imagination, cannot mean the whole entire property.
But what about the issue, the temporal quality of its marketability? Let's accept, Mr. Kelly, what you say. Mr. Rosenberg seems to suggest you sidestep the current equity value and
Your Honor, it all goes to value. But value only comes into play in valuing the gift of the shares. Granted, at some point in time, but we're going to pay the tax on the value of these shares less the annual exclusion. What they're talking about goes to value. It not once, no way, does the tax court, nor does the government address what in the world is the plain meaning of this statute and the words future interest in property. And I put it to the court that under no stretch of the imagination, without total chaos, can the nature of a corporation or the nature of its property turn its shares into a future interest. That's impossible.
The government, is that because of the total of the property always has a value? Is that what you're saying?
In other words, number one, I don't think value can be used to define a future interest. All right? There may be many future interests that have more value than the share of an LLC in a privately held corporation, no doubt about it. But the share of a privately held corporation set up as stipulated in this case as though it were an arm's length transaction between disinterested people. That share is a piece of property. Strike the word piece. It is a property. A separate standalone property that cannot be turned into a future interest because of the nature of the property within the corporation. And that's what the government is trying to do. And I would say one more thing, if I could. Future interest is a legal term. The IRS says that. I agree with that entirely. And all lawyers look at the word future interest in property, and no lawyer can walk away from those four words believing that it can possibly mean the whole entire property. And everything else, reversions, remainders, other interests or estates set forth in this regulation, there is not one word that could possibly be construed as saying a future interest in property can in fact be the whole entire property. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thanks, Kelly. Thanks, those words.